Namaste and blessings. The Swami welcomes you with great love and great respect from the heart of all. This is Meditative Living with Swami Shivananda Giri. And today, as we continue our exploration of the authoritative Guru Gita, just found out from the National Weather Service, we are under a severe thunderstorm warning. So, Sonic, are you there?
I am.
All right. By the way, welcome back to having your voice on. I've had people ask, where's Sonic? How come we don't hear Sonic? Well, because we're, you know, moving in a direction that it doesn't always open to two speaking, but just want to let you know we are now under a severe thunderstorm warning, which could bring about tornadoes and all that sort of nastiness. So if we lose the connection, don't be terribly surprised. And thank you for being not only a friend, but the primary facilitator of Type1Radio.com. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Namaste.
Okay. Now, the work that we are discussing and that this Swami is reading from is the authoritative Guru Gita of His Holiness Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj of Los Angeles, California, who is this Swami's guru and made this Swami a Swami. In 2007, he became the very first white-skinned American-born human being to be invited into the rank of the 80 Mahamandaleshwars within Sanatana Dharma, more popularly known as Hinduism. And this is a work translated from the Sanskrit by Acharya Padma Najendra, and with commentary written by Swami Anantanandagiri. So, let us dive right back into this text, which is a conversation between Shiva and his wife, Parvati, where he is explaining the function of Guru in both the transcendent, infinite, eternal way of understanding, as well as the human form, which is a person who has attained the infinite and eternal and is completely comfortable there. So, we move on with number 42. Shiva says to Parvati, "One easily attains the supreme bliss by giving up all thoughts and meditating solely on the Guru. Therefore, by all means, please the Guru." Swami Anantananda's commentary. To meditate on the Guru means to be absorbed in samadhi, to become one with the Guru Tattva. This is a vantage point untouched by thought and characterized by all-pervading unity and bliss. It is by means of the personal, human form Guru that this is able to occur and to become stable. Now, this Swami would add, quite a few people have had glimpses of this state. There are varying types of samadhi. Samadhi can be translated as absorption. And this is when one's perception shifts and they become aware, sometimes for only a moment, sometimes for minutes, perhaps hours, but then it fades away. And you're back to focusing and functioning from this limited body-mind complex point of view. 43. The Guru is the embodiment of the supreme knowledge. This knowledge can be attained by one's devotion to the Guru. This has been clearly stated by the divine sages, the ancestors, and the learned men. The commentary. 42 introduces us to the idea that all thoughts must be given up in order to attain the supreme bliss, and that this can be accomplished by meditating solely on the Guru. 43 speaks of the Guru as the supreme knowledge itself. Although these two ideas may seem to contradict one another, this is not actually the case. Jnana, knowledge, is the firsthand experience directly of absolute consciousness. The personal living Guru is consciousness absolute made manifest. The knowledge of the personal Guru, an experience he imparts or she to fit disciples, is, quote, the peace that passeth understanding, end quote. It is not an idea that you like. It is not a chant you can memorize. It is something greater than anything that can be apprehended by the mind. Since the personal guru fully knows the infinite self, which is formless and attribute-less, but also experiences the world of manifest existence as an embodied human being, he or she is simultaneously fully divine and fully human. Thus, the guru is the highest embodiment of the supreme. The personal guru provides the unique ability to have a relationship with the supreme through the agency of your senses in a form with which the seeker may interact. God uses form to lead us beyond form. 44, Shiva says, the word guru has two syllables. The first one, gu, means darkness. The second one, ru, means light. The guru is indeed the Brahman who removes the darkness of ignorance by lighting the knowledge of Brahman. The commentary. As this shloka, or verse, demonstrates, the grammar of the Sanskrit language is permeated with an esoteric significance at every level, even down to its most basic elements, its root words and individual letters. The simple act of studying and contemplating the mechanics of the Sanskrit language prompts the student to inquire into the nature of the self, with a big S. Just by examining the two syllables of the word guru, a rich tapestry of underlying meaning is uncovered. This very subject is probed, beginning here in 43 and continuing in shlokas 46, 47, and 91. The first of these shades of significance imparted here is this. Brahman, which is the overall, formless, without any attributes, qualities, this, the everything, the source of everything, is self-illuminating. It is by Brahman that the ignorance is dispelled, and it is Brahman that is revealed once this has occurred. This implies a sort of dual identity on the part of Brahman. Brahman is the deity who transcends all else, yet is the innermost self who is immanent in everything that exists. The guru, the physical guru, is Brahman on both counts. So there isn't any duality in actuality. All there is Brahman. 45. Shiva says, the guru is the doctor who cures the disease of samsara, this mortal existence with its birth, death, and rebirth. Swami Anantananda's commentary. Samsara, the cycle, the appearance of birth, death, rebirth, death, over and over and over, is the result of ignorance. Allow this, Swami, to step away for a moment and point your mind at the fact that ignorance is not stupidity. Ignorance is simply not yet knowing perfectly. So let us begin this sentence again understanding that. Samsara is the result of ignorance, but is eliminated when the guru eliminates this ignorance in the seeker. The guru is the physician to this disease. The guru is the mechanism by which Brahman illumines itself. Thus, in order for the individual to remember their own true nature as Brahman, this must be illumined. And the mental conditioning that obscures that must be destroyed by a person who has already been freed from the same ignorance and its resulting bondage. To be freed from this bondage means to have broken the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. Thus, the one who achieves liberation while still embodied, referred to as a jivan mukti, does not take up another body upon leaving the last. Rather, he or she fully embraces the repose and peace that is Brahman. 46. Shiva said, Gu means beyond the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. And Ru means beyond the forms. Hence, the word guru signifies the one who is beyond the three gunas and all forms. The commentary. In the philosophy of Samkhya, all of existence is either prakriti or purusha. Prakriti means nature and is essentially everything that exists in the appearance of separation. Purusha is the formless self, who is both the first cause and the most essential nature of all of prakriti. Purusha and prakriti essentially correspond to Shiva and Shakti, respectively, of Shaivism. The word guna means quality. Thus, there are three qualities attributed to nature, the primordial mother, if you will. These are sattva, rajas, and tamas. Everything that exists is composed of some sort of mixture of these three fundamental qualities. Tamas is described in terms such as inert, sluggish, slothful, stupid, etc. Since everything is made of the mind stuff of Shiva, let us regard the tamaguna as dense mental conditioning. Even rocks are made of consciousness. It is only that it is subject to tamaguna that makes a rock a rock. According to Guruji, our Guruji, Baba Muktananda used to use the word jada, which means something like stupid like a rock, to scold disciples who were too caught up in the guna of tamas. Rajas is the quality of passion and activity. On a macro scale, the act of creation itself is a rajasic affair, a mind that is under the influence of Rajas Guna is easily, if not always, agitated. It can be prone to fright, anger, sadness, etc., all to varying degrees. It is a mind that is uncomfortable unless it is busy. All activity and all ambition stem from the quality of rajas. The guna sattva means pure, calm, clear, and harmonious. It is still a quality of nature. It is still a variety of mental conditioning. All spiritual practice is essentially the work of making the mind more sattvic, purifying it of the other two qualities. When the mind becomes calm in this way, it is like a pond that was previously agitated by children throwing rocks into it, but has since been allowed to settle. When the water settles, it becomes clear, and one can see beyond to the bottom of the pool. When the mind becomes sufficiently sattvic, the self, the big S self, which transcends even this godly quality of nature, can be clearly seen. This is a mind that can be transcended. It is a mind that no longer confines one's awareness within mental boundaries. A quote here for you. When there is no mental agitation, then occurs the highest state. The guru, now we're talking about the physical guru, is one of purified intellect who has become one with the Purusha, who is beyond the ephemeral world of appearing form. The first letter, Gu, manifests as Maya and the Gunas, the illusions of a world with attributes. The letter Ru represents Brahman, the destroyer of this illusion. Now, before launching into this, kindly allow this Swami to say, within Kashmir Shaivism, we do not share the same opinion as those in Vedanta who would say that the Maya is not real. Yes, it is real. We are experiencing it. It is just that it is limited and it is temporary. Okay? So we do not deny the reality of the appearance. We see the appearance as part of the source, just in limited form, much like a spark from a bonfire. When that spark leaves the bonfire and can then be noticed as a limited spark, it didn't quit being fire. Swami Anantananda's commentary. Again, the personal guru is the form in which God has chosen to manifest his grace, the power responsible for the destruction of the deluded notion of I as distinct from an other. From Brahman, the guru tattva, or the guru principle, a web of individual entities so multifaceted that it composes an entire universe, appears to be manifest. That is essentially the definition of Maya. At some point, each of these limited individual entities comes to see correctly that the notion of separation and limitation inherent in everything in existence, down to the level of the subatomic particle, is just a ripple that plays out for a time upon the vast undivided ocean of consciousness. It is then, and only then, that it loses the idea that it is only the ripple, and it becomes the entire ocean instead. So, the Guru Tattva creates from itself illusion and bondage, but also creates the means for its emancipation by becoming the personal guru, the living master, who is the grace-bestowing power of God. When this happens, the drama of how one ripple will interact with the others loses its importance. As the all-encompassing ocean of consciousness, one no longer cares what swims through its waters. All of these appearances are witnessed, but the only possible outcome is unity. Thus, there is a peace to be found in this state that cannot be found anywhere in the universe of name and form. 48. Shiva stated, "This state of guru is so high that it is not easily attained even by gods. All the eagles, the Garudas, snakes, the Nagas, celestials, and even the gods worship such a guru." Swami Anantananda's comment. All of these lofty beings are merely ripples upon the ocean of consciousness who are identified with their state of existing as a ripple. The Khandogya Upanishad tells the story of how even Indra, the king of the gods, had to spend 100 years at the feet of his guru. Sonic, let's go ahead and do the bottom of the hour break song, and we will move into number 49 when we return on Meditative Living.
Shivaya, Shivaya, Namah 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 Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva, Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva, Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva, Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva.
Welcome back to Meditative Living with Swami Shivanandagiri as we continue our exploration of one of the most difficult to understand texts in existence, but it is also extremely illuminating. This is the authoritative Guru Gita. Now, number 49. Shiva says, O Parvati, for the seekers of liberation, there is nothing which can be worshipped that is greater than the Guru. To such a Guru, the disciple should be willing to offer his very life. Swami Anantananda's commentary. A human body is a transitory thing. Identification with one is bondage. Liberated by Guru's grace, one knows the self, with a capital S, as both everything and everyone that exists, as well as that which is beyond all manifestation. In other words, the self is both everything and no thing. A perfect disciple is willing to offer his very life without hesitation in service to the Guru. This is the natural result of knowing the self, with a capital S. Alternatively, a disciple who does not yet have full knowledge of the self could come to the same state of perfect surrender through love of the physical Guru. When this happens, self-realization is not far off. However, this is the end, not the means. If you are not there now, don't sweat it. If your arm has to be twisted in order for you to concede that the transpersonal self should take priority over the individual self, you are still a half-baked pot. Conversely, when you are at the destination, this perspective will be yours quite naturally. In the meantime, perform sadhana, your practice, to whatever extent you are capable, and the rest will take care of itself. Quote, the body is the oblation, end quote. Number 50, Shiva says. The disciple should offer clothing, bedding, decorations, housing, a vehicle, etc., in order to please their guru. Swami Anantananda's commentary. The guru's life is a life of service. What is offered by the guru is the realization of man's highest and most noble potential. To realize the self is not only the highest good that an individual can do for themselves, it is the greatest good that the individual can do for humanity and the world at large. Not only does one who has become self-realized find unconditional peace and equanimity, but their interaction with the world and the rest of its inhabitants becomes more peaceful. The more enlightened people there are in the world, the more peaceful and harmonious the world becomes. Furthermore, the more enlightened people there are in the world, the easier it becomes for everybody else in the world to become enlightened. The so-called 100th monkey effect is a theory that posits that a new behavior or idea can be acquired as an exponentially accelerated rate by the remaining members of a population through means that can't be explained by the models of consciousness and cognitive function that are currently accepted by the scientific community. This outcome is effected, so the theory goes, when the number of individuals who have learned that behavior or idea reaches a certain critical mass. The actual mechanics of how new behaviors are learned and of how the knowledge is acquired may not be represented perfectly by the theory of the 100th monkey effect. However, the idea does convey something of the snowballing momentum that a radically different yet collectively beneficial shift in perspective can acquire. The simpler explanation for how one's enlightenment encouraged that of others around them is that the sattvic, or peaceful and clear mind, a trait that invariably accompanies the perspective of self-realization, shifts other minds and the surrounding environment toward the sattvic end of the spectrum as well. This can be demonstrated quite simply on a smaller scale by the observation that words and actions stemming from fear, anger, or hatred tend to perturb others and generate more of the same. However, if the situation is to be resolved in a healthy and peaceful way, this requires an individual who can engage it while maintaining their cool. In other words, agitated minds are made more calm in this example. Adhisthana, or the atmosphere created by the personal living guru, blesses the entire world. It imparts a peace and clarity that is contagious in a way that is comparable to the example given above, yet more pronounced, even supernatural. One might feel this peace wash over them just by seeing the guru, seeing a photo of them, or thinking about them. An ignorant person will see the guru, the physical guru, as taking advantage of other people. An intelligent person sees that it is the people interacting with the guru who are benefiting. A wise person sees that the work in which the guru is engaged, along with the work of the sincere seeker, is of benefit to the entire universe. Thus, anything one can contribute to the guru's mission of restoring the vision of unity to humanity is beneficial to oneself and to every being in the created order of things. In the immortal words of John Fogerty, you don't need a penny just to hang around, but if you've got a nickel, won't you lay your money down? Number 51. Shiva told Parvati, one should always worship the guru in thought, word, and deed. He should prostrate to the guru without reservation, like a long stick lying on the floor. Swami Anantananda's commentary. Inaction is impossible. Even in doing nothing, karma is effective. Yet, if one's every thought, word, and deed are focused upon the guru, everything one does will promote liberation rather than bondage. One should throw themselves at the guru's feet like a stick falling to the floor, utterly unconcerned with all else except offering the utmost reverence to the guru. Number 52. Kindly allow this Swami to step away from the text for a moment and testify to the fact that upon meeting our physical guru for the first time, when his door opened and he, for the very first time, to this Swami's senses, outer senses, we had interacted inwardly, but not yet outwardly. This Swami had no difficulties in any way, shape, or form lying down on the floor in the doorway and touching his feet. This is a show of respect. And when he touched this Swami's back and said out loud, Om Namo Narayana, it was completely blissful. A complete shift at that point occurred. And this Swami stood up with the biggest smile possible. Shiva told Parvati, one should surrender his body, senses, money, wife, and all family relations to the guru. Swami Anantananda's commentary. There is nothing that is not God. There is nothing that is not the guru. There is nothing that is not the big S self. There is nothing manifest that exists in any way outside the guru or is made of anything other than the guru. There is nothing that does not belong to the guru, no action that is not witnessed by the guru, or any small s self who is served other than the guru. To surrender completely to the guru in the way described here is to treat everyone with whom one interacts as guru, and to offer everything one does to the guru. One should carry out their duty while striving to renounce the idea of me and mine. One should surrender all sense of differentiation to the awareness that all appearances are only the guru. For more commentary on this, the reader is referred backwards. So we won't go back over that. What this Swami will say about that particular number 52 there. When it says one should surrender his body, senses, money, wife, and all family relations to the guru, this is metaphoric. What you are surrendering is your attachment to these apparent other than you things. It does not mean write the guru a check for all the money in the bank. No, 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 no. This is about releasing yourself from attachments that are the nature of bondage. Number 53. Shiva says, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, by whom the world is pervaded, the entire world appearance, all is guru only. There is nothing greater than guru. Therefore, one must worship the guru. Swami Anantananda's commentary. When a person washes their body and dresses it in attractive clothing, they are only ever cleaning and decorating the temple that houses the guru tattva. When a person treats the senses to beautiful music and delicious food, who is there to hear and taste these other than guru? When a person feeds and clothes others who are less fortunate, who can this service be said to have been rendered unto other than guru? When there is nothing that is not guru. Now, stepping away from the text for a moment, this is again referring to the transcendent, not the limited. The transcendent appears to us who are in the limited form through a limited appearing form. Okay? Even, back to the text. Even if all these activities are carried out for completely selfish reasons, ultimately, it is only the guru who is glorified in worship. When one thinks erroneously, I am only this body, their actions bring suffering and bondage. When one rightly recognizes that all they do is for guru only, their actions become liberating. This is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita's teaching on karma yoga found in its fifth chapter. Allow this Swami to expand here. This is a tremendous sticking point for many, 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 many. And it does not, by getting stuck at a point such as this, it does not make you inferior, weak. No, 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 no. It means you're moving through the process. If you are listening to the words of this Swami today, there's something in this for you. And it does not mean anything in particular. You're being given a peek into the ultimate, the supreme. and you will have a great deal more inner transformation and mental conditioning to drop. The Guru's feet are like the shining crest jewels of Shruti. He is the exponent of the truth of Vedanta. Hence, one should worship the Guru. Swami Anantananda's commentary. The shining crest jewel adorning the highest place within the vast body of revealed wisdom that is referred to as Shruti is the body of Vedanta. The term Vedanta means end of the Vedas. Veda means knowledge. The Upanishads are the nectar of the Vedas. The Guru is the one who makes the truth of them evident, but even they cannot even begin to encapsulate what Guru actually is. All words fail the glory that is Guru. The best they can ever do is point toward Guru. The feet of the Guru, now speaking of the physical, are the crowning jewel of the Vedanta in the sense that it is a vehicle for Guru's grace. Yet, this Upanishadic wisdom itself is only a portion of Guru. It is only the lowest part of the Guru Tattva, namely its feet. 55. The Guru is one's real wealth. Merely remembering him, one attains self-knowledge. Therefore, one should worship the Guru. Swami Anantananda's commentary. There is nothing greater than Guru. The Guru is everything that exists within this whole universe. The Guru is all of the deities responsible for its creation, sustenance, and dissolution. The Guru transcends all of these and simultaneously pervades them as well. Ancient sages heard divine hymns in their deep meditative states, their union with all that is. The term Shruti literally means that which was heard. They brought these hymns back to the world for the sake of humanity. What is left of these is known today as the Vedas. Thus, even the sublime word constitutes the feet of the Guru. It is the lowest part of him, yet it is still Guru. The word is his power or Shakti, which is one with him at all times. The Vedas encompass all areas of human learning, but the essence of them is always the divine, the Guru, the Self. These most distilled of teachings, entire sections of the Vedas, which are entire literary works unto themselves, are called Upanishads. These Upanishads are collectively known as Vedanta, the end of the Vedas. These teachings are the end of the Vedas in the sense that they are the highest lessons. the distilled essence. The worldly ends of the less mature individual who seeks refuge in the Vedas can be met by means of the knowledge and power contained therein. When it is acknowledged, there is no satisfaction to be found in the world without self-knowledge, a higher lesson can be found in the Vedanta, the essence of the Vedas. The Guru. Now we're speaking of the living Guru. Is the living mouthpiece of the Vedanta, the end of knowledge. His word is the goad that leads the fettered soul to the highest goal, out of the bondage of delusion. The guru is one's true wealth. Any worth attributed to anyone else is only so by merit of its association with the guru. It is part of the guru. That is what catches our eye, steals our heart, and sometimes robs us of our wits because of erroneous identification. Guru is the value in gold, the beauty in women, the power of an emperor, and the freedom of an eagle. When we know the guru as he truly is, or she, we understand that this wealth is the wellspring from which all that is valued issues forth in the first place. The guru is one's true self, with a capital S. To remember the guru is to realize the true nature of the self, who you always were in reality. For all of these reasons, the guru should be worshipped always. In three slokas, all of this information has been relayed. Three times the message has been driven home. One should worship the guru. The guru is ever worthy of worship. The worship of the guru is the only pursuit worthy of your attention. The reason for this? The guru is the only thing there to worship. Ignorance of this is the root of suffering. Acknowledging it leads to knowledge. The result of knowledge is the end of suffering and the dawning of bliss. We'll pick up next week on Tuesday with verse number 56. Thank you ever so much for allowing this Swami to be of service. Namaste and blessings. Om Namo Narayana.